Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Lord. A lot to talk about today. We're going to start off the show with Andrew Jones being snubbed from the Hall of Fame. Again, that's not necessarily a surprise. He still has a few more times to get in, but at this point, he should already be in. Jim Harbaugh to the Chargers. There's a report that a deal is close, but it didn't happen. It was supposed to happen, or it was expected to happen last night. Falcons might have an interview with them today. We'll see what happens there. Potential NFL draft prospects. And we're going to talk about Raheem Morris, who is the second coach to finish his second interview with the Atlanta Falcons. But starting off with Andrew Jones, the MLB Hall of Fame was announced yesterday. There were three players that were elected. It was Joe Mauer, Adrian Beltre, and Todd Helton. I think all those players are deserving. But Andrew Jones, now his seventh year on the ballot, falls about 13% short of the 75% threshold. He was up 3% from last year. He has three more times. Usually on those last two, three times, you see some bigger increases, 5, 6, 10% sometimes. So I do expect Andrew Jones to get in, but the fact that he's not in is really ridiculous. Listen, here's a couple things that I want to say about it. One, if you are the best player in the history of the game at a certain aspect of the game, how are you not a Hall of Fame? You got a guy like Ozzie Smith, who's regarded as the best defensive shortstop of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame. Now, but Andrew Jones, who also hit 434 homers, he's not just a defensive player. He's the by far the best defensive center fielder of all time. On top of that, for a decade, he was the third most valuable player in the entire league behind Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez, two guys that were in the heart of the steroid scandal. You could argue he was the best player for a decade in the game that was clean. It's absurd. And the whole process, it's never going to be fixed. So I'm not going to complain about it too much. They're never going to fix the process, but the guy needs to be in the Hall of Fame, and the baseball writers and their gatekeeping of guys in the Hall of Fame has just gotten absolutely absurd.
Yeah, they're absolutely dorks. I saw John Heyman. I'm forgetting what specific player he was talking about that he didn't vote for, but wanted to see in get into the Hall of Fame. That right there shows you all you need to know about what the process is like getting baseball players into the Hall of Fame. It's an absolute joke. It's a travesty, really. And I think that you could take it a step further and say that it's the biggest flawed Hall of Fame of the major four sports, hockey, football, basketball. You go to any of those sports, like Chase just said, the best special teamer of all time in the NFL is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Like Devin Hester is going to get into the Hall of Fame eventually. Cordarrelle Patterson, who had a very forgettable NFL career, is going to have a shot getting into the NFL just because he tied the record for the most touchdown kickoff returns. If you can't write the story of baseball, football, whatever sport you're talking about without said player, and I think that's true with Andrew Jones speaking about the greatest defensive center fielder of all time, however many gold gloves he had in a row during that span, that 10-year span, then he should be in the Hall of Fame. That should answer your question, regardless of what his career tailed off to be. When he was at his best, you cannot write the story of baseball without him, and that should be your answer. I think it's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, 10 straight gold gloves. And as I said, it's not just defensive prowess. I mean, for 10 years, he was the best defensive player in the entire baseball. You could argue he's the best defensive player ever, not just center fielder. He's the best defensive outfielder. He might be the best defensive player to ever play in the history of the game. And on top of that, he hit 434 home runs, most all of which came over a 10-year span. I mean, we're literally talking about a guy who's up there with A-Rod and Barry Bonds. And the only two reasons those guys aren't in the Hall of Fame is because of steroids. Those are two, if you take steroids out of it, two of the best players to ever play the game. They're two top 10 players. I mean, you're talking about two guys with more than 700 home runs. That's who he was along with for a decade. And I understand his career fell off. But hypothetically, right, Andrew Jones retires after that 10-year stretch and doesn't go on and have a bad stretch of 6 years to end his career. He's already in the Hall of Fame. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So just because he had those bad 6 years, he is not getting in. He's not already in. But if he had retired after those 10 years, he'd be in. Think about Joe Mauer, right? Retired early. He has seven less career WAR than Andrew Jones. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Right when he started going on the downside, he just said, hey, I've had a good enough career. Whatever. first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, Joe Mauer is not a better player than Andrew Jones, and he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. And there's so many examples of guys in the Hall of Fame that were not nearly as good as Andrew Jones. And he's going to get in. I would be shocked if he doesn't get in. But if he doesn't, it's a travesty. And it's a shame to baseball. And it's ridiculous. And it's just a joke. But the guy that you're talking about, Heyman, was Billy Wagner.
He finished
five votes short. If you're going to let relievers into the Hall of Fame, like, I understand their war is not going to be as high as some of the other guys. You got to let in Billy Wagner. I mean, this guy was 38 years old playing for the Atlanta Braves and kind of his send-off. He had a 1.43 RA as their closer in 71 appearances and a 13.5 K9.
Heyman said, I'm glad my vote wasn't the deciding factor. Like Chase said, five or so votes short. John Heyman, who is one of the big four or five guys in baseball in terms of reporting, said that I'm glad my vote didn't keep him from getting in because I think he should get in. What are we doing here, guys? Did you just hear yourself talk? Do you read your tweets before you send them off? That's one of the most idiotic statements I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, just absolutely low IQ, boneheaded stuff. I obviously am riled up about the Andrew Jones thing, but I think this process, and I do the same song and dance every year. We did it last year with Andrew Jones. We did it the year before. The fact of the matter is this process, I know you said it's not going to change. I can't complain about it. I'm going to complain about it. It's absolute bull, you know what. I mean, it's absolutely crazy that some of these guys feel like they're the gatekeepers of the America's pastime. Grow up. You're not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And then you can even go a step further. I mean, a lot of guys had Billy Wagner on their ballot last year and then don't have him on this year. I mean, what changed? Like, the guy has been retired. Like, did you just have were you really having a tough time sleeping knowing that you put Billy Wagner into the Hall of Fame last year? I mean, it's almost like, I don't know. It's really hard to explain, and I don't understand what a lot of these voters think. And I think some of these voters should get stripped, but as I said, you know, it's not going to change. It's been this way for years. They've been gatekeeping the MLB Hall of Fame. Another guy that didn't get in that was a former Braves player, Gary Sheffield. He's now off the ballot. Obviously, there's these different committees that could change that, but his thing was more about steroid usage, and we could get into the whole steroid conversation, whether some guys belong in and who doesn't. I don't know if they're ever going to let those guys in. It certainly doesn't seem so. Clemens didn't get in. Barry Bonds doesn't look like he's getting in. A-Rod doesn't look like he's getting in. But it's disappointing for Andrew Jones. That is for sure. Coming up after the break, Jim Harbaugh to the Chargers. It looks like a deal is coming to fruition. What does that mean for the Atlanta Falcons? Yesterday, Mike Garofalo of NFL Network reported that the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh were closing in on a deal. He's been the favorite to be the next Chargers head coach for quite some time. Obviously, Michigan was still in the picture. And the only other team that he interviewed, at least so far, with is the Atlanta Falcons. Now, one interesting aspect is the deal didn't get done yet, and supposedly he has a second interview with the Falcons scheduled today. So if he does come to Atlanta and do this interview, obviously it's not a done deal yet, and maybe Arthur Blank can make one last push. But let's say it is a done deal. Let's say he is going to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. What do you think that means for the Atlanta Falcons in this head coaching search?
I do think that Harbaugh is high up on Blank's rankings. Obviously, you know, I'm going to go with what everybody else is saying, that I still think Arthur Blank wants Bill Belichick, but let's just play the what-if game, and it's not Belichick. I think that Jim Harbaugh would be one or two on Blank's list. You know, he's hired first-time head coaches every single year the past three cycles, every single cycle the past three cycles, and it's clear that he's done because, you know, he's getting up there in age. He will be 82 years old by the start of the 2024 campaign, and he's tired of putting his, you know, eggs in a basket of an unproven head coach. And if you want to talk about proven head coaches, yes, Mike Vrabel got the Titans to the number one seed in the AFC, did some things in the playoff, ultimately fell short. Bill Belichick, obviously, his pedigree is second to none. He is up there in age. Jim Harbaugh is the best of both worlds. He's like 60 years old, 61 years old. So this could be a 10-year marriage, so to speak. And he's got the track record that Blank is obviously enamored by with Bill Belichick. He's won at Stanford. He brought Stanford, which is just a laughable program, to an 11-12 win season. He goes from there and immediately takes the San Francisco 49ers to three straight NFC championship games in one Super Bowl, to which he fell to his brother John Harbaugh, or I think it's 2012. And then he goes to Michigan and he wins a national championship. And Michigan was an absolutely dormant program. Michigan was an afterthought to Ohio State. And now it's the other way around. So I think that if you're looking, you know, in the direction of Bill Belichick, a proven winner, a guy who's done it, Jim Harbaugh is the best of both worlds, because he's going to be there and there for the long haul, where, you know, Belichick's going to be 72 years old. How many more years does he have of this, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, I'll simplify it for the people out there. Enough with the resume. Obviously, it's fantastic. I think Jim Harbaugh was the one candidate that if they were going to woo Arthur Blank away from Bill Belichick, he was by far the most likely candidate for all the reasons that you said, because he's younger, because he has the resume, because he has the offensive pedigree. I think he was the one candidate that, yes, but the reality of the situation, and we've talked about this, the candidate also has to want the Atlanta Falcons. And while Los Angeles, they have their problems with the cap, they have Justin Herbert and they're in Los Angeles. Like, that they have Justin Herbert and they're in Los Angeles. Those two things are very attractive. And then obviously we don't even have to really get into the Rich McKay aspect of everything, because none of the top candidates, as has been reported by Jeff Schultz and others, are really fond of the idea of reporting to a Falcon CEO, a general manager, and probably Arthur Blank as well to make their decisions. So yeah, I think if there was one candidate that could have wooed Arthur Blank, it was Jim Harbaugh. And if he's off the table, I really think it's just more evidence that it's probably going to be Bill Belichick.
I did want to add a little wrinkle to all of this, that Albert Breer, a very plugged in guy, basically went on Rich Eisen and talked about why Bill Belichick and the Falcons, what's the holdup other than the obvious Rooney Rule satisfaction. They have to do that. Other than that, what is the holdup? He was talking about the organizational structure, nothing new, the Rich McKay stuff. But before that, he was talking about the same exact scenario with the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh. I saw some Falcons fans on social media talking about if they let Jim Harbaugh out of the building and come to Atlanta for his second interview, you know, you gotta double whatever the Chargers offered. Guys, a lot of the times money is not an issue with these guys. It's about everything else. It's about, you know, family life, you know, who am I reporting to? The whole Rich McKay, the organizational structure is just as important as the dollars and cents. And if you do want to get into the dollars and cents, Arthur Blank is worth 8 times as much as the Chargers owner. So if it's going to go, you know, my bank account versus yours, the Falcons are going to win. So I promise that is not a worry. The worry is the organizational structure and how Jim Harbaugh feels in these specific scenarios. It has nothing to do with the zeros at the end of the check. Nothing.
Yeah. No, and the organizational structure would be a problem in Atlanta, as we've talked about time and time again. And it's not just Bill Belichick. I think that's what needs to be emphasized in all this. All the top candidates are going to have a problem with this. No one wants to deal with that BS. It is not normal. It's not how a football organization should be run. And it won't just be Jim Harbaugh and Bill Belichick too. I mean, Ben Johnson, I would imagine he would have a problem. Any of the top candidates will be shied away from this organizational structure.
It is very simple. Arthur Blank, Rich McKay, no chance you're watching. I hope this finds you. It's very simple. You want to be a world-class organization. You know, you want to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. Arthur Blank referenced the Pittsburgh Steelers and Art Rooney in his Arthur Smith firing press conference. You want to be those organizations, the Ravens. You want to be those organizations, the Packers. You let the GM do the GM's job. You let the head coach do the head coach's job. And the owner is there for resources and to bounce ideas off. There is no CEO who's basically running it like a corporation, because the NFL is not like that. NFL teams, you cannot run like the Home Depot. You want to look at the best world-class organizations in sports, the Atlanta Braves. Look at your neighbor, Arthur Blank. Look how, take a note out of Alex Anthopoulos' book. He does his job. He lets Brian Snicker do his job. And that's how it should be. It's very simple.
I mean, you want to be like those organizations, start acting like it. It really is that simple. Coming up after the break, we're going to take a break from the coaching search. NFL draft talk. Taking a little break from the Falcons head coaching search, I wanted to discuss the NFL draft. We have some mock drafts from Mel Kiper. There was an article on ESPN where they talked about, you know, the biggest questions for the top 10 teams in the draft. And Michael Rothstein's for the Falcons was, are they for sure going to draft a defender? And obviously the answer to that is no, because whether Terry Fontenot is involved or not, the process should always be best player available. And what I really wanted to discuss here is just how talented the other side of the ball is. Now, Dallas Turner is a great player, could be a top 10 pick. Terrion Arnold, Jared Verse. There are a few guys that could be selected in the top 10. But if you're looking strictly at the Falcons' needs on both sides of the ball, I mean, Brock Bowers, I know you don't need a tight end, but Brock Bowers is one of the best just overall prospects I've seen in quite some time. If he's available at 8, I don't care that you got Kyle Pitts. Run 2 tight end sets. Move Kyle Pitts to wide receiver full-time. I don't care what you do. That's a guy that you can find a role for on this team. Then you go to the tackles. Listen, Jake Matthews, he ain't getting any younger. Caleb McGarry, we don't even know how much longer he's going to be with the team. Joe Alt, Fashanu, there's a lot of guys there. Wide receivers, you need to pair someone with Drake London. You got Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. The offensive side of the ball in this draft, if it goes quarterback, 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 you're going to have a ton of blue chip prospects available for the Falcons.
Yeah. The first 10 selections in the draft very well could be all offensive players. And that's to say that the 10 best players in the draft could be offensive players. And obviously, like you said, there's guys like Dallas Turner, the UCLA edge. Latu. He's injury history, but still a heck of a player. Dallas Turner, we obviously know his pedigree out of Alabama. I think that, you know, it looks like it's going to be Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels. That's what everybody thinks. And if it isn't that order, it's going to be some order of quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. I think Falcons fans should pretty much just write off quarterback because Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, any quarterback that you think could potentially maybe no. All of those quarterbacks are going to be reached on. It's not going to be a fit, especially if we draft Bill Belichick. If we bring in Bill Belichick, I know we're going away from the coaching. It's not going to be a quarterback, folks. So I think that, you know, if you're a Falcons fan and you're into the draft, you should start looking into some of these other prospects because there's a ton of guys to get excited about. And like you said, I don't care if he's a tight end. Brock Bowers is a better prospect coming out of college than Kyle Pitts was, and we took him 4th overall. Obviously, that hasn't, you know, materialized like many people had thought, especially after a record-breaking rookie season from Kyle Pitts. But injuries, terrible quarterback play really hindered him from realizing his full potential. And the same is going to happen with Brock Bowers. If we draft Brock Bowers, he's the best player on the board. Nothing's going to be fixed regardless of who we draft until we fix the quarterback position. So it doesn't matter who we draft at 8 this upcoming April until we fix the quarterback position, whether it's a tackle, one of the 2 tackles, like you said, another skill position player, that'd be 4 straight top 10 draft picks spent on a skill position player. I don't have an issue with it. My issue is what are we going to do at the quarterback position? That's going to be the question. As soon as the head coaching question is answered, the next question is going to be, okay, whoever's hired, what are you doing at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, and obviously if there's ever, and it might just be a sliver of possibility, but if there is any possibility where we get to 4 and one of those quarterbacks is available, the Atlanta Falcons have to be doing everything possible to draft up. And if the Bears somehow make the number 1 overall pick, same thing. I mean, if there's an opportunity to get one of these three quarterbacks, which we both don't think there will be because they're 3 really, really good quarterback prospects. And what are quarterback prospects do? They go 1, 2, 3 in the draft. I mean, Zach Wilson and Trey Lance were drafted 1, 2, 3. You got to think that these guys will be drafted 1, 2, 3. So if there's any possibility though, for sure, go out and get your guy because that's what the Falcons need most. But this team has so many holes. I mean, first of all, our defense obviously made strides. There's no doubt that there's still holes. You need a pass rusher. You need a cornerback. A linebacker looks pretty good. But outside of that, I mean, even safety, I know you're not going to probably take a safety. There's no safeties, I think, going to be in the range, but there are plenty of holes on the defense side of the ball. There's plenty of holes on the offensive side of the balls. I mean, like I said, the 2 tackle spots are, the future is very cloudy there. The wide receiver, you don't really have one. And even Kyle Pitts, I mean, if you think 2, 3 years down the road, Do you know Kyle Pitts is going to be on the roster? I mean, I don't think that's a slam dunk guarantee. So, I mean, there's holes everywhere, except for running back. If we take a running back eighth overall, we can all get pissed.
Listen, the fact of the matter is the best teams in the league, like I said in the last segment, if you haven't seen it, go check it out on the YouTube, Sports Talk ATL. All of our content is on the YouTube. Subscribe, like, we always appreciate it. Listen, if you want to be the best, if you want to be with the best organizations, and I do believe the Falcons have done it thus far, is you just take the best player that's going to be there. And that doesn't mean physically. It means, you know, culturally, mentally, obviously physically, as the best fit for your team at the time, regardless of position. And there's no better example of that than the Baltimore Ravens. They constantly do it. Ozzie Newsome really popularized the BPA, best player available draft philosophy. And now pretty a lot of teams do it. And a lot of teams find success. You build through the draft, and then you round out the roster through free agency. It's a simple formula, and I expect the Falcons to do it again this year.
Yeah, and that's what the Falcons are going to do. I mean, free agency occurs before the draft, so a lot of these holes that we're talking about are going to be filled in some form or fashion. And your job is to fill as many of those needs as you possibly can so you aren't forced into a hole during the draft where you feel like you have to go get an edge rusher. You have to go. Now, quarterback's a different thing because you need a quarterback no matter what. But every other position, you fill all those needs as best as you possibly can.
All right, let me ask you a question. Top guy right now, assuming it goes quarterback.
Like for the Falcons at eight?
For the Falcons at eight, top guy.
I mean, am I going to homer it here and say Malik Nabers? I mean, I think Malik Nabers is going to be a superstar wide receiver. I really do. And I don't, I have no problems doing the whole skill position thing. But I wouldn't mind someone like Joe Alt. I wouldn't mind because I think the offensive line, has been such a strength for the Falcons. And you've seen how a good offensive line can propel you from week to week, even with bad quarterback play, which we've seen over the last two seasons. So I wouldn't mind something like that. I do think Jake Matthews is reaching the end of the road. And I do not think Caleb McGarry is here past next season. So definitely wouldn't mind something like that either.
Yeah, I think I would actually flip him. You know, both of us are LSU guys. I think Malik Nabers is the top wide receiver other than Marvin Harrison. And I think that there could be a conversation to be had depending on where the pair land, just what their career trajectories look like. I mean, Malik Nabers, there is no weakness in this guy's game. Short routes, intermediate routes, deep routes, you know, contested catches. After the catch, I mean, Malik Nabers is a superstar, but I think, you know, Joe Alt should be in line for a top three pick. But since it's a quarterback needy league, he's going to fall. And yeah. I think Joe Alt is like a top three prospect in this draft. He's that good. He's a freak.
Yeah. I mean, and if you can get a guy like that and stabilize one of the most important positions that doesn't get talked about enough in left tackle, you go from Jake Matthews to Joe Alt. I mean, you've done a damn good job there for two decades at one of the most important positions in the game. Just about the opposite you've done on the edge.
It's the third most important position in sports. You know, you can really, you know, you need a quarterback. You need people who can pressure the quarterback, and then you need somebody who can protect the quarterback. Those are the three most important positions in this league. I mean, the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl because they couldn't protect Patrick Mahomes. It's that simple.
We got to go to break, though. Coming up after the break, we're going back to the head coaching search. We're going to talk about that man, Raheem Morris. Raheem Morris finished his second interview with the Falcons. He is now the second coach to interview for the Falcons for a second time. That was weird to say. Bill Belichick being the other. Raheem Morris was the interim head coach for the Falcons before they hired Arthur Smith. I think that's why this is kind of a wonky and somewhat unbelievable fit, because are they really going to just sit here and say, oh, we made a mistake 3 years ago, let's hire Raheem Morris? But Alex, tell us what you like and what other players like about the potential of playing for a head coach like Raheem Morris.
I will say, you know, if you're running a business and you make a mistake 3 years ago, there's no sense in doubling down on that mistake. With that being said, I don't expect Arthur Blank and Rich McKay to do that. I would expect them to double down on a mistake from 3 years ago. And that's why I agree that this fit feels wonky. Admitting the past 3 years were a colossal failure. I think that the most desirable attribute of Raheem Morris's candidacy is how he is viewed around the league. Obviously, you know, Jalen Ramsey, who's now a Dolphin, he was coached. He played for Raheem Morris in Los Angeles, said that he knows a lot of players who would love to play for Raheem Morris, regardless of where he coached, which is a huge bonus in free agency because players weigh all kinds of things, not just dollars and cents. Fit, family, the list goes on and on. It's not just about money. So that's a huge thing. A huge player for Raheem Morris's candidacy is how players view. But building a staff is also very important. And Les Snead, the general manager of the Rams, spoke at length about how Raheem Morris is viewed in this league. He could build one heck of a staff, according to Snead. Jalen Ramsey, he is a top three player at his position. I don't care about the injury. He's a top three player at his position every single year. First ballot Hall of Famer. He's telling you how he feels about him, Raheem Morris, as a head coach. I think you just take both of these gentlemen who have accomplished so much in this league at their word and just believe that Raheem Morris could build a heck of a roster with the help of Terry Fontenot and one heck of a coaching staff. I mean, those two right there, I think the rest of the pieces kind of fall in place.
Yeah. I mean, he's had experience with the Bucs, had a good first season. Second and third seasons obviously led to him being fired. He was decent as an interim with the Atlanta Falcons. What does he learn from there? I think my biggest thing when all these things come out is, yes, they sound sexy, but, you know, this is a former player of Raheem Morris's. Obviously, they have a good relationship. Jalen Ramsey is going to be pushing his guy up there to try to get a head coaching job. Les Snead, same thing. You see this all the time. You saw this with the Chiefs with Eric Bieniemy. Andy Reid was like Patrick Mahomes. They're all like, oh, he needs to be a head coach. Now you look at Eric Bieniemy, not necessarily a head coaching candidate anymore based on what he did in Washington. The other thing that we have to talk about in this thing is, listen, we just came from two coaches back to back and Dan Quinn and Arthur Smith that had a ton of respect from players. Players wanted to play for them, like yada, yada, yada. And it didn't work out. So I don't know how much this should play into the decision-making process or whether Arthur Blank would even consider it at all.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, to a certain degree, you shouldn't weigh these two things the heaviest, but you should certainly consider him. The job Arthur Smith did, getting Calais Campbell in particular to Atlanta, cannot be understated. Calais Campbell had 6.5 sacks. He was tied for the Falcons lead. He was instrumental in turning around that side of the ball. That wouldn't have happened without the help of Arthur Smith. And I think, you know, obviously the ultimate goal wasn't accomplished, but you could still take bits and pieces of success from Arthur Smith's tenure. And, you know, the fact of the matter that players loved playing for him is certainly one of them. I do agree that if you're not coordinating the offensive side of the ball, my question to you is, what can you do to get us over the hump? And if you want to talk about Raheem Morris's ability to connect and draw out offensive minds, I mean, there's a guy in LA, Sean McVay's quarterback coach, who's going to get an offensive coordinator gig this season. He seems like he's the next one up. He would be a hell of a guy to bring with him, and Raheem could do that. So I think, you know, he's been on the staffs in Atlanta. He's been on the staffs in LA. He's got ties back to Tampa Bay. I think it's one of the most important things is how successful are you going to be building out a staff on the other side of the ball that you're not coordinating?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've talked about being the most important thing, especially if you hire a defensive coach. I don't think there's any question about that. But are you buying the fact simply, I'll ask you this to end this segment, are you buying the fact that he is the quote-unquote backup plan to Bill Belichick?
So this comes from D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that he is a, you know, the fallback to Bill Belichick. And I believe it a little bit because the timing is very inconspicuous about how Bill Simmons came out and basically said, we talked about it yesterday. If you haven't seen that part, go look it up on the YouTube Sports Talk ATL, that Bill Simmons came out and basically was like, there's internal rifts between Arthur Blank and his subordinates, Rich McKay, Greg Beatles, seemingly Terry Fontenot, about hiring Bill Belichick. And he kind of referenced what could be said behind the scenes of like, yeah, we'll get a guy like Raheem Morrison here. We'll have our job for the next 5 years. So it does feel a little bit like it's not a coincidence. Those two things kind of showed up. I don't think there's a – you don't go into an offseason with a backup plan, in my opinion. You might have the top guy, and then as you go through interviews, you're like, all right, we're ranking these guys. But I think that it's Bill Belichick or bust. I don't care what Josh Kindle of The Athletic reports. It's still Bill Belichick or bust. It's just if those two sides can come to an agreement on the organizational structure.
Yeah, that's my whole thing. I don't think there is a backup plan. No. I think it's Bill Belichick, or we got to scramble and pick one. Which one of these guys we like? Maybe the familiarity with Raheem Morris makes sense and makes it an easy, you know, backup plan. But I think they're going to be scrambling and look and you know, really, especially if Jim Harbaugh goes to Los Angeles. I don't think there is much of a backup plan. Coming up after the break, Arthur Smith. Several teams interested in hiring the former Falcons head coach. Arthur Smith may not be the head coach of the Falcons anymore, but he will not be on the couch for long as he wants to coach again. Diana Russini of The Athletic reports that over seven teams are interested in him becoming the next offensive coordinator. Is this a surprise to you? I mean, it's not a surprise to me.
It's not a surprise to me because the people who hire offensive coordinators aren't fans, and they can compartmentalize unlike fans can. Fans are just looking at his ability to maximize Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson, and ultimately the Falcons' failures. That's all fans are looking at. What a prospective head coach or GM is looking into Arthur Smith as an OC is his track record and what he did, obviously, with the Titans and Ryan Tannehill, what he did with Matt Ryan, how he changed the offense to fit Marcus Mariota's skill set away from Matt Ryan. And that offense was one of the more successful units, obviously not top 10. And it took a step back, but everybody who's making decisions can look at some film and realize that he was working with crap. I mean, I said it when he got fired that he really drew the short end of the stick. And I know Falcons fans aren't going to want to hear this, but most of the Falcons problems rest on the shoulders of Desmond Ridder. And I know Arthur Smith was the one who got the axe, and he deserved it because he was the one who kept pushing Desmond Ridder. He is at fault for that. Maybe he just shouldn't have personnel decision-making power, and he should just take whatever quarterback he gets. But the fact of the matter is the guys can still coach up an offense. Can he win a Super Bowl as an OC? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is he can still formulate a good game plan and execute it. Maybe he just shouldn't be in charge of who the quarterback is.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Tannehill was playing like a top 10 quarterback with him as the offensive coordinator. Derrick Henry led the league in rushing. His rushing concepts obviously are second to none. I mean, maybe you could say Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, but those are literally the top of the top. He's up there with the best in terms of creating a scheme for running the football, which is very important in the league today. Kind of gets lost in all the pass happy stuff, but when you look at the best teams, go look at the 49ers, go look at the Lions, go look at the
Ravens,
like they run the damn football. Unless you have Patrick Mahomes on your team, you need to run the damn football. And
they do, and they've been running the heck out of the football this year.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not a surprise. I mean, listen, you're right. He was working with crap. Someone's head had to roll for the Desmond Ridder thing. Turned out to be his. Whether it was right, whether it was wrong, we'll probably find out in the future. I'm sure if he goes on and has some successful years in the near future as an offensive coordinator, he'll get another opportunity as a head coach because he wasn't terrible. I mean, the stuff that he did with Marcus Mariota 2 years ago and that rushing attack was truly, truly very impressive. I mean, the fact that we won seven games with Mariota under center in that roster was impressive. As Mark Zeno said, he was kind of, you know, screwed because we experienced so much success when we probably should have gone 4-12 with Marcus Mariota and then had like a 3-game improvement this year. But someone's had to roll.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Fact of the matter is the guy never had above average quarterback play. His best quarterback play was probably Matt Ryan, and he was somewhere between 16 and 20. And you could even argue he's maybe past 20. So he never even had above average quarterback play. And like I say, a good quarterback can cover up so many weaknesses. Zach Taylor is my biggest biggest, you know, proponent of this is Zach Taylor would have been fired if it weren't for Joe Burrow. You put Joe Burrow in Arthur Smith's system and just see what happens. Yeah. I know, obviously, Joe Burrow's
a top. Or how about this? Dak Prescott. Because Jeff Saturday is saying the Falcons should trade for Dak Prescott. The Atlanta Falcons are searching for a new quarterback this offseason. It is by far the biggest. It is going to be the biggest move that they make this entire offseason, no, bar none. Head coach, offensive coordinator, doesn't matter unless you have a quarterback. We've said it a million times. One name that we definitely haven't heard before, but Jeff Saturday brought it up. I'm assuming it was on ESPN when he was on Get Up or whatever. He says Dak Prescott to the Atlanta Falcons. Now, listen, I don't think there's any way Dallas trades Dak Prescott, so let me just nip that in the bud. They're going to keep him. They're going to roll with Dak Prescott until he can't play anymore because that's Jerry Jones's guy, and we know when Jerry Jones has a guy, he ain't leaving him. But hypothetically, you know, maybe he tries to force his way out. How would you feel about Dak Prescott in Atlanta?
Well, let's get it out of the way. It wouldn't be difficult to understand why Dak Prescott might potentially force his way out of Dallas. The Cowboys are a clown show. Coaching or playing for that team is practically impossible to do and succeed at. You're under a microscope. You want to talk about the Falcons organization being the mess. You know who wrote the blueprint for a mess? Jerry Jones. So, you know, it wouldn't be hard to see Dak Prescott. You got CeeDee Lamb's mom on Facebook talking about Dak ain't it. Micah Parsons' brother also being like, you know whose fault it is. Dak has done far more good in Dallas than he's done bad. Has he got him over the hump? No. But there's very few quarterbacks who have gotten their team over the hump. Would I take Dak Prescott in Atlanta? Hell yeah, I would. Are you kidding me? He's a borderline top 10 quarterback. Some would argue he's a top 10 quarterback. He played like a top 10 quarterback most of the season. Obviously, he faltered in the postseason. But if we're just talking about the Falcons getting back to the postseason, Dak Prescott could do that very easily.
Yeah, I mean, Dak under center, the Falcons win the division this year. They probably make a run at the divisional round. And who knows, the NFC Championship. But you saw what the Bucs were able to do. They pushed the Lions to the brink. That's an interesting thing that you mentioned. You mentioned Jerry Jones. And I said when Jerry Jones has a guy, well, you know how you don't become Jerry Jones's guy very fast? You piss him off and you demand a trade and you say, I don't want to be in Dallas anymore. Because the pride on that man has screwed the Cowboys for decades now. And if Dak Prescott were to just say, hey, I want out of Dallas, I don't want to be here anymore, I think the pride on that man may be like his tone around Dak Prescott, where he's been defending him and all this stuff, might change real quick. Could be like, actually, I think Dak is the problem. We're going to move him. So there is like a hypothetical situation that I just thought of when you were saying that, where it's like the pride on Jerry Jones is bigger than the egos on just about everyone on this planet walking today. And if Dak forced his way out or said he didn't want to be there anymore, perhaps something changes in Jerry Jones' tone.
I think his ego is big enough where it wouldn't even have to be something along the lines of forcing his way out of Dallas. Jimmy Johnson just wanted a little bit more control of the roster. He was like, Jerry, I know what I'm doing. And Jerry was like, no, get out of here. I can do it without you. Any head coach can coach this talented football team. Guess what? Jerry Jones never won another Super Bowl. So I think that it could be much less if Dak Prescott was just like, I need you to, you know, silence my teammates' family. I need you to kind of make it aware that that is not helping, or just something trivial like that. Like, I think you want to talk about Arthur Blank is desperate. Nobody's more desperate than Jerry Jones. He's on the precipice of meeting the Grim Reaper and he wants to win. So
that's a messed up way to put it, but you're right. You're not
wrong. He is.
You're not wrong. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that Jimmy Johnson beef went on for, what, 3 decades?
Yeah,
I mean,
they just got over it.
And getting over it was probably very reluctant. It was like, okay, I guess you can be in the Ring of Honor or whatever. You know, it's like, I guess you can be in. You only won 3 Super Bowls here or whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, the guy's ego, as I said, it's probably as big as anyone that has walked this planet before or after him. I mean, it is up there with the biggest. And hey, when you own the Cowboys and you own a $7 billion team, I'd probably be the same way, especially when you did help the team to 3 Super Bowls, even though it feels like ages ago, it was before we were alive. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Maybe there's something there. We can pray. At this point, it's simple. Let's pray.
Dak Prescott would be the best option out of what we have. You know, Justin Fields, any of the quarterbacks in the draft, not named Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, or Drake May, any other free agent. Justin Fields, I think I said him. I'll say him twice.
Yeah, Dak Prescott would Baker be Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill,
Baker Mayfield, everybody.
Russell Wilson. No doubt about it. He's a top 10 quarterback in this league. They were talking about the MVP 4 or 5 weeks ago. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back with you on Thursday.